Everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of the internet's most hated mafia themed geek podcast, the Long Coat Mafia Podcast. It is I, the Reverend Godfather, the show's main host and frontman, and this week I bring to all of you out there a special crossover slash mirrored episode with a Long Coat Mafia Podcast twist to it. And I say that because this past Thursday, June the 6th, I got to see X-Men Dark Phoenix at the Alamo Drafthouse in Winchester, Virginia, with Josh from Victims and Villains, and with special thanks to the folks at Alamo Drafthouse and Alamo Drafthouse, and super thanks to Josh from Victims and Villains. We got a chance to record, me and Josh, for his program, Victims and Villains, a review episode of Dark Phoenix. Now, here's where the Long Coat Mafia podcast twist comes in. Because there has been stuff that has been coming out and has come out, not just since this past Thursday, but since this past week, that I want to commentate on. But I'm going to save that for after the review, after the mirrored stuff from me and Josh and what was recorded for Victims and Villains. Now, I'll say this. It's going to be in two parts. The first part is going to be the non-spoiler review for it. Then it's going to be the spoiler-filled review. The spoiler review is going to be a little bit bigger. Much, much longer. It's going to be the bulk of this program, so bear with it. And for the most part, I am not going to edit any way, shape, or form of Josh's initial recording, because he sent it to me in raw format, and the message he puts out, because Victims and Villains is, even though they are a geek podcast, and they're a great bunch of folks, great bunch of guys, their secondary message is suicide prevention, so I'm not going to cut out their message. I will refuse to cut out the message that they're trying to give to everyone, and that is suicide prevention awareness. And I will put all the, not just the Victims and Villains links, but the suicide prevention links, which is if you're by any chance struggling with depression and having suicidal thoughts, we at the show don't want you to have these thoughts. And if you're struggling with these thoughts, we want you to contact the suicide prevention hotline. And their hotline is 1-800-273-8255. Or you can text 741-741. And there is hope for you out there. And you do have value. So please, if you're having these thoughts, please contact someone. There is help for you. Call the national hotline, which is, again, 1-800-273-8255. Links, these numbers will be in the description down below if you don't understand. And they will be reiterated by Josh himself in the first part of the program. And when he states that we're going to go to break, there's going to be our 12-second promo in there. And I'll let you know when the spoiler stuff begins for all of you. So don't worry about that. I'm going to stop it right here so we can get into our spoiler-free version or spoiler-free discussion of Dark Phoenix. So I'm going to step back. I'm going to now give you that part of the review.
Welcome back to Victims and Villains. We're moving from comics to film because we are live at the Alamo in Winchester, Virginia, to talk about the brand new X-Men film, the final X-Men film from Fox. I'm joined by Mr. Chris the Godfather Lumser. What's up, man?
Hello, everyone. Hello, Josh. How you doing?
I'm well, so let's jump into it, man. Yeah. No spoilers.
Oh, man. Okay.
No spoilers then, just yet.
Okay, okay. I was about to say, that'd be the case, you know, if you don't mind giving me a copy, and I'll include it, and I'll be more than happy to tag everything, that, as you know, in my end of things, your show, and standard links. So, I can add my little two bits either to the beginning or to the end of our little fun little review, if you don't mind.
Well, sure. What's So, no spoilers for this film just yet, but what are your general thoughts kind of coming out of it?
It was better than X-Men 3, though that was out way better. Well,
2006.
2006. So, more than a decade ago. And part of me is kind of looking at the folks. It's kind of hard to describe where we're at right now. It is on a level of geek that is almost for us on a whole new level. There's movie posters all over the walls here in this green room, and I'm kind of like looking for the X-Men 3 poster, trying to get a reference. But
X-Men 3 Last Stand is 2006. I just watched it yesterday, but the closest I think you're going to get to it in this room might be the Ghost Rider.
might be
Ghost Rider, because I don't see anything else from 2006.
Me neither. No. Well, no. Yeah, you're right. Maybe no. This is kind of hard to describe. Like, maybe no.
Yeah, it's wall-to-wall movie posters, and it's wonderful and glorious, and we're going to explore so much of it right after we get done recording. But Dark Phoenix, what are your thoughts?
It was better than I expected, or I didn't go into any external reviews in regards to this, because when I see a geek film, I try to stay away from any external reviews so I could go in unaltered, and I don't have any bias than what I go into. So, like I said, it was way better than 3. It had a lot of similarities to what I remember from watching the cartoon, which is, again, even further back than 2006.
1980. The comics is 1980. Cartoons was like mid-90s, mid to late 90s.
So that was mostly my experience with the Dark Phoenix saga. And for, I think, a lot of folks that were like myself that kind of collected comics in the 80s, we had our baseline, a lot of kids my age, our baseline for a lot of DC and Marvel lore were the animated series. Granted, they weren't comic exact, but for a baseline, they were perfect. So, not to mention, I have a lot of geek friends that are way geekier and way knowledgeable than I am. So, do I recommend seeing it? Yes, at least once in theaters. And comparing it to the last movie that was out, X-Men Apocalypse, again, it was also way better. I want to say it's way better that because I watched Apocalypse a few days ago in regards to at least getting
prepared
a little bit. And when you look at X-Men Apocalypse and
ouch
in regards to special effects, meaning there were parts in the movie when you look at it that was designed to pause it on screen, take a screen capture and use it as a desktop. That's at parts for that. This didn't have that.
See, I have my own quarrels with that like section that we'll get to when we get to the spoilers, but I'm also going to say that this is, I've been trying also to kind of keep away from like reviews, and it's hard because the reviews for this film hit like Tuesday,
right?
And critics are talking about how bad this movie is. It's it's entertaining, but I will also say that I can understand where they're coming from.
Right.
It's a misguided tale, especially coming out of the source material at the beginning of this episode to prepare for it. Thank you once again to Andrew. But also at the same time, I think that it's entertaining, but I also have my quarrels with it coming out of it. Fresh into my mind, it's entertaining film, still have quarrels with it.
And I'm sure we'll hear some of those quarrels once we get into a little bit of the spoiler section of the review. Because it's kind of hard to talk about a movie without actually spoiling sections. And as a guest on your show, it's kind of hard... for the folks that might be listening, when as a guest, you have to follow. I won't say follow the leader, but the main host, Josh, is the one that controls the dance, and it's being in studio, air quotes, with Josh is a completely different experience than, let's say, him being in studio with me. Where in essence I control the dance, and it's an odd this is an odd experience for me because I'm not on Skype, I'm not controlling my environment in a way, so it's weird for me.
Welcome to the danger room. How you like that X-Men reference? So what we're gonna do is we're gonna take a quick commercial break, and we're gonna go ahead and jump into the spoilers. So. What we're going to do is we're going to take a quick commercial break and jump into spoilers right after this message. But once again, if you or someone you know is struggling with suicide, addiction, self-harm, or depression, please reach out. Suicide is currently the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. There are 129 suicides that take place each and every day. And when you scale back internationally, there are 800,000 successful suicides. That is one death every 40 seconds. So please, if you or someone you know is struggling, you guys can reach out to us on any of our social media. Call the Suicide Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. You can text anonymously to 741-741. Or go to victimsandvillains.net/hope, where you guys can get even more resources past those ones that I've just mentioned. And again, all of those resources are going to be in the show notes for wherever you guys are listening to this episode of Victims and Villains or any of our content at all. So please, like the Phoenix, we're going to rise, and we're going to be right back after this commercial break.
The Long Coat Mafia Podcast, the internet's most hated mafia-themed geek podcast. Listen to new episodes every Monday, where podcasts are found.
Hey everyone, it's me, the Reverend Godfather. I just want to jump in here for a quick word, and that is that I hope you enjoyed our spoiler-free review / discussion of X-Men Dark Phoenix. And if you don't want to hear any spoilers about X-Men Dark Phoenix, I suggest you skip ahead another 51, 52 minutes. That way, you don't have to worry about spoilers, and you could hear what I have to say in regards to X-Men Dark Phoenix, which is a lot of the stuff that's been going on surrounding the movie as a whole, and it won't contain any spoilers. So, that being said, now for the spoiler section of the review stemming from Victims and Villains.
Welcome back to Victims and Villains. We are still live at the Alamo here in Winchester, Virginia, and we're jumping into the spoilers territory of Dark Phoenix. So if you guys have not seen it yet, please, please, please run to your local theaters and go check it out and then come back and hit play. But I'm going to start this off because this is the final... Spoiler warning is now in effect, by the way.
Yeah, Superman dies.
Man, no. So this is the final X-Men film that we're getting from Fox before it enters into the MCU. How do you think that this fares as a final goodbye for a franchise that's been breathing for 19 years?
It, on that aspect, it seemed almost like a... I don't want to really say a slap in the face, because it didn't have... When you look at a lot of the... over the past 19 years in the Fox section of the Marvel Universe, you had the standard almost copycat flicker of comics and everything else. I didn't notice that. I might have been trying to write down my menu order, but I didn't know. It just had the standard, okay, Fox intro logos, and that was it, and it just got into it. And it was like, no, we're not going to do it. We're not going to do it. It's like, wait a minute. It's supposed to be an X-Men movie. It's supposed to be a Marvel, not, I won't say an MCU movie, but it's still considered a Marvel movie. And it didn't have the standard flicker. One of the other things I was expecting to kind of see at the start, or even though we didn't really stay after credits, but something that saying thank you, Stan, I didn't even see that. And that's one of the things, even with the even though you didn't really see it in Avengers Endgame, but I think they even had like a thank you Stan somewhere in there. Especially in Captain Marvel, you had a thank you Stan Lee for everything you did. But this didn't have anything, even though if it didn't have it in Endgame, I can understand it because it was in Captain Marvel. They did it that way. This, they could have at least on the Fox end said thank you Stan, even though you had a executive producer credit. It should have been there.
I mean, this film, I think that the what we got with Endgame and Stan Lee, like that kind of, that really kind of is better. Like, it's peaceful the way they ended it, right? That way, I think that Chris Claremont, of all people, or John Braun, who are the reasons that the Phoenix is even a entity in the Marvel Comics universe, I think that they should have gotten a little bit more credit with this one. But I mean, as a final farewell for a Fox film, this film is a serious letdown in that regard. I kind of walked into this expecting basically no X-Men to make it out alive. I expected more deaths past just Mystique and Raven. Honestly,
I only heard that there was going to, that's one of the things I heard. It was going to be like, yo, you're never going to believe who dies in Dark Phoenix. Technically, two people died, but we know about Raven. We now know Raven died in the hands of Phoenix, or the Dark Phoenix. And as for a lot of folks out there who know the comic, there's no Kree in this at all.
Well, the Kree and the Skrull like really didn't have like a huge part in the comics. They had like a little bit towards like the last couple issues of the saga, but it was the majority of the villain in this, in the comics, was actually the Hellfire Club.
Yeah, right.
Which I'm kind of let down that wasn't in this one. But Jessica Chastain plays the villain in this, and she is of the Baldari
something
Empire.
Like that. But to me, it kind of, even though they had that reference to it, but it seemed like that they were heavily referencing, because the if you want to call her the leader, the way her hair is, and you know, it being long white and being almost the one of the main people.
It's really stretching.
Yeah, I'm stretching here, but you could, how they kind of made it, it was like hinting at a Hellfire Club reference and a Emma Frost touching on it.
Because I'm pretty sure from what I read, like the Jessica Chastain character was supposed to be, there's similar race in the Marvel comics close to the Skrull, where she can shapeshift into it, because when we first introduced her, like, they're like, ha ha ha, dinner party kind of thing, and you get to kind of just kind of sit with the dog, and she goes out there in this very brief looking she returns to the dinner party and kills everyone. It's like they never really build up the villain at all up and go anywhere with her. They just kind of show up, and they have like maybe one or two throwaway lines that kind of explain quote motive, and then that's just kind of it. Like, it almost kind of seems like background noise in the overall plot of the film.
I'm going to say you're right in regards to that, but I want to point out one thing. We're going to jump ahead a little bit, is that we could always jump back, but did you notice the patches on those on the guards in the train?
MCU?
Yeah, MCU. I was like, I normally have my phone on severe dim typing up notes. I know you have a pen and paper, but I was like, well, this one's like, the guards had, my notes was like, that's in essence the last half of the film is when I was taking notes. And Patches say, damn you, autocorrect, because it says Patches say McIntyre. No, they said MCU.
I think that's supposed to mean like Mutant Containment Unit.
Right. But I think when initially this movie was being made, the merger wasn't in effect. And therefore, this could have been kind of almost a slap in Disney MCU's face, saying Marvel, in essence, Disney and Marvel is the bad guy. We're Fox. Then all of a sudden, Disney merged with Fox and bought Fox. So, and they didn't really have time to edit that out.
There's going to be so much memes that come out of this movie.
Oh, that if not already, if not, the fact. I don't know what you have written down, in regards to where you started with your notes. So we'll go from there. I know I jumped ahead a little bit.
No, you're good. And I knew one of us was going to bring that patch scene up.
I know for a fact, from what I heard on my end, that the ending was
changed.
It was more Captain Marvel-esque in regards to the ending. From what I heard, I don't know how accurate that was, but that's what I heard.
It seems more anticlimactic, which is another reason I think that as a final farewell to the X-Men and Fox, like, it just seems like kind of anticlimactic and it kind of falls. Like, it's still an entertaining film, but when you're talking about, you know, putting a bow on all of these films, it definitely falls flat. You look at Logan, how that ended,
right?
His entire arc for 17 years, you still think about it today, and I don't know about you, but I still like get really teary-eyed thinking about those final couple scenes.
The ninjas cutting onions coming to your house?
Just a little bit. And then you look at Endgame and look at just how perfect of a ending and culmination that was. And that's what I feel like it should have been, but I feel like Dark Phoenix is an unfortunate kind of Dark Phoenix is ultimately a product of the Disney merger, because I think it ultimately got hurt by that financially, and just the way that the film flows a little bit.
I think that you're right on that. You have a valid point on that, because it does seem a little bit like that, because if there were rewrites and reshoots in this, there were a lot of similarities to 3. A little bit in regards to, they didn't, it's like they were trying to do 3 but better a tad,
which is ironic, because the gentleman that wrote this film also wrote the third one.
Maybe that's why.
So Simon Kinberg. So let's jump into this one. Simon Kinberg, it was for a while. So after Apocalypse, they set this up. They set this film up, which let's jump into that. And another thing that I kind of really took me off guard about this film is that Apocalypse sets up Jean with the Phoenix Saga. Phoenix already.
Right.
By the end, that is how Apocalypse is defeated, by the Phoenix Force.
Right. That's what kind of got me as well. It's like, they set her up as Phoenix, and she gets the Phoenix in this. I'm like, oh, that's a little...
But it takes place 10 years after she's already had it. So that's why I'm like, what is this?
Right. And as well as, you know, with it going that in mind, we both know, seeing Apocalypse, that Storm is, and Magneto are graciously overpowered, or were overpowered by Apocalypse. Therefore, with that being said, if Magneto was a level 10 mutant, or the highest level mutant on the planet, he should have been able to at least done something in regards to being on par with Jean Grey at this point.
Keep in mind that there is that scene where they're at Magneto's like little island.
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute, is that a Genosha reference? You know, in a way, you could say it's like if the movies were still going, that could have been a great Genova reference right there, because they didn't really refer to it as Genosha. The fans could say, oh yeah, that they're referring to Genosha in that. But another thing is like, that I could say that they did, because we kind of did spoil it. Raven does, or Mystique does, die in this.
Well, Disney set themselves up for failures because they put that in the second trailer.
I don't watch a lot of the trailers.
I don't either, but I had friends that ruined it for me. They're like, oh, this totally shows the death of Mystique. And it's like, well, you just set yourself up for failure. You look at how BVS did it with showing Doomsday in the second trailer. Or that one.
Or how they showed John Connor getting shot and being in the majority of the movie in the trailer for
Genesis.
But with that, it's like everybody kind of knows that Mystique has her own healing factor as well. So it's like that's a little bit of a disappointment. You underpowered another strong mutant, in a way.
Well, I mean, at this one, after Apocalypse, I think one of the most common complaints about Apocalypse was how Jennifer Lawrence, who plays Mystique, kind of phones it in. Like, her performance is just kind of flat throughout the duration of the film. And my wife and I, like, we had, like, long conversations about her specific performance, because you look at performances like Hunger Games or Silver Lining Playbook and or Joy or Mother, and you see how good of an actress she can really be when she believes in the project. And then you kind of get into some of these X-Men films, and it seems like everything past Days of Future Past with her character has just kind of been this like really dull, really flat, really monotone, just uninvested character.
Do you think that's why she was only in the movie for maybe what, a half an hour, hour?
Well, that's the thing, is like I don't even know why they really had to give her like kind of the screen time, because they made her a leader in this one, which is such a weird thing, because the first class movies are supposed to basically say, okay, we're telling the stories of the teams that you know from the 2000s movie with Pat. Mystique was consistently on the Brotherhood of Mutants with Magneto and him. One, you just kind of have her up and down as a good guy, which kind of to me just didn't make sense. And I don't know enough about the Raven that we know from the First Day films or First Class films or this Echo Remain
plan for Lawrence, but the character herself was more so a rogue. I don't mean the character or X-Men rogue. I'm talking about the overall personalities. Even though she's a character or a bad person, she'll be good if she needs to be good. Or email the person that was mostly on X-Men other than Logan was Magneto. Magneto would be there would be a time that Magneto was the bad guy. Then he'd be on the X-Men for a little while. Then he'd be the bad guy again. So he was the character that was always on and off with the X-Men, not Mystique. I think with the movies, they were trying to reverse that a little bit, trying to keep Magneto who he is in regards to that he was a friend of Xavier, but still the bad guy, the polar opposite of what Xavier stands for. Yet to be on the other on again, off again of the X-Men, Mystique was supposed to be that, aka Raven. But I don't think the writers really tried to do that. And another thing, did you notice that the uniforms that the X-Men were wearing were the new X-Men's?
I knew that, like, because it was taking place
it
in
was
the 90s.
It was the new X-Men. They were the... I think it was when it was Grant Morrison. I got an internet connection here. I'm going to see if I can pull it up through Google. It was the new when the first films came out. The reason why they were leather was to mimic the new X-Men comics that were out at that time. And let's see if it comes up on Google. New X. Go. And let's see. No, it's coming up. New Mutants. Oh, yeah, here it is. This is the 2001 series, New X-Men.
Oh. I always thought that they went to give the suits to kind of mimic the 90s and, like, the colors of how they looked, kind of with the you know, the neons of that decade, but I feel like we've spent a lot of time talking about what makes this film not the greatest. And this film, after Apocalypse was released, Bryan Singer, who had directed this one, he had stepped down to focus on Bohemian Rhapsody. And you can also check out our Bohemian Rhapsody review with this one as well. Talk about Bryan Singer, but this film didn't have a director for a while, so Simon Kinberg actually made his directorial debut with this. And I gotta say, from someone that really loves directors in this medium, I think he did a really good job. This is a visually, for the most part, is a visually stunning film.
I can almost say that for a new type of director, a new director, doing a superhero film can be tough, because especially if you don't know the source material or the genre in general. I don't know if he does or not. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong.
He has been a part of the X-Men franchise, I want to say, since the early days. Okay. He had originally been the writer of Last Stand, and he might have even been a writer for one of the first two films, but he's been producing this franchise forever. He's been deeply involved in Fox's interpretation of these Marvel characters.
Now, I will say this, because even though you said that we've been trying to talk about the negatives, but I want to say this. A pissed off Kurt Nightcrawler, oh, that was badass. Him just, I want to say that. It's like, let me just focus on a pissed off Kurt for a little while, because that's a character that you don't really, that I don't really remember ever seeing pissed. That level of, I'm going to kick your ass. And that's what he pretty much does. He takes it up a notch. It was just a fun, cool thing to see. At least on him, just going full out and just doing what, in some instances, what Nightcrawler does best is using his teleportation as a fighting, along with a fighting technique, more than you saw in Apocalypse, because he just used it poof, 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 and that was it. This was poof, strike, poof, strike, strike, just all over. This was a more educated Kurt. Mm-hmm. So it was just fun to see, and just him taking it up to an nth level.
Well, I feel like when you meet him in Apocalypse, you don't really see how he becomes Alan Cumming's version in X2. And it's been a couple years since I've seen X2. But with this one, I feel like you kind of get to see how he becomes his character in X2. Like, where he ultimately ends up. Like, to me, I feel like out of all the characters that are in this film, he definitely feels the most well-rounded as a mirror image of how we come to know him in X2 in the church in the beginning. And I will say, while it was cool to see, it kind of was a strange narrative choice to make, because he just snaps after a guy that he's met for like 20 minutes dies and kills, and he's like, oh, I'm just gonna go on a rampage. Like, that just kind of what broke him. Like, I don't know, it just, it to me, like, it was a weird choice for motive to kind of set him off that way. It was awesome to see. It's a right. visually stunning sequence, and props to Simon Kinberg for pulling that off, because it looks awesome. And like you said, like, it's a very well educated Kurt that has been with the X-Men for 10 years now. He knows how to really use and hone in on his powers and his strengths, and that's what I really loved about seeing his arc throughout the course of this. But also at the same time, I don't know, it's just it, the what sets it off kind of took me out of that moment a little bit. But once you kind of like gel yeah. into it, it's cool, really stunning
to see. I will admit that that aspect of, you know, in the scene is that the guard just walks down by Kurt and looks at him briefly and goes, my son was a fan. And it was an odd twist to, like, in a way that he wants to prove that he's still the hero that he was, but it was just an odd way for them to go that route, that he wanted to save this. There were overall some jumps and leaps that I think you brought up earlier that they could have explained a little bit more, and they just didn't. One of the things I did have, I don't know if you wrote it down, is that one of my biggest gripes is the whole "when bullets don't work" trope.
Yeah, yeah, I'll give you that.
It's like, when do you stop? It's like you're pulling. I can understand. There are movies that I've seen is like they have a low caliber gun and they use it on the bad guy or the bad person, if you will, and it doesn't work. They grab a bigger gun to use that, and that I can understand. And it's like, okay, this caliber didn't work. I'm going to use a higher caliber. Maybe that will work. Okay, that didn't work. Let's bring in the tank. Okay, that didn't work. And they still ramp it up. And it's like, okay, at what point do you say, heck with this, I'm just going to go home? And it's just like, they're just putting round after round after round into the aliens and everything else. It's, and nothing's working. They just keep getting up. And it's like, you know what? Well, granted, we got to defend this train, this objective, but at what point do we say, you know what, nothing's working?
Well, I think that kind of also goes too into the underdevelopment of these characters, for the most part, especially with the villains, because these guys are supposed to be this big bad alien race, and yeah, we've established that nothing's going to stop them. Clearly in this mythology and this the rules of this universe, that when an alien cosmic force comes in, of course ordinary guns are not going to kill them. But you know, they just, I don't know, it's just, it kind of goes back to that thing. But I want to jump back to Nightcrawler real quick.
Okay.
And I gotta say, Nightcrawler, Beast, and Raven as well, when you look at, there's a lot of CGI in this film, but the practical effects in this film look astonishing, especially the details that they were able to manage, because there's a lot of close-up shots with Beast and a lot of close-up shots with Kurt as well, the Nightcrawler, yeah. And there's the detail that they put into the special effects and the practical effects of on these actors, freaking astonishing. I think this is some of the best practical effects that this film franchise has seen since the early days of Rebecca Romijn in X-Men.
Oh, nothing could probably top her. Nothing could probably top her, but or at least with when was Beast in X-2?
Beast was in X3, and Kelsey Grammer still looks phenomenal. His yeah. He still holds up really well.
I was just thinking, because I know that with Romijn, she was still Mystique in 3. Mm-hmm. So I will say, in regards to that, the makeup holds with both I won't say Kramer's Beast looks a little bit, but in regards to this new line of X-Men movies, older, there was more to him, like meaning he was like progressing towards the Kelsey type of Beast or version of Beast, and you saw that with Kurt in the where Kurt has like kind of like the lines in his face a little bit, the like the circles and that aspect. You kind of see that in the practical in this, like he gets that during this fight in the, on the train. Granted, we don't see. It's just pretty much, I think it was more, I don't think Jennifer Lawrence wanted to be in full body.
Well, she was actually allergic to it when she did it in First Class. She had actually had an allergic reaction. So when they
went in Apocalypse?
No, in First Class. When she had First Class, like if you watch her, effects throughout First Class, the Days of the Future Past to Apocalypse to now, it gets progressively more and more like skin toned because she was actually allergic to the material they were using.
Okay, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. And that being said, she wouldn't be the first actress to be allergic to the body makeup that, at least that I know of in history. Folks at home, the other person that I know would be Virginia Hay, who played. I forgot the character's name in Farscape, but she mostly was in blue and kind of light blue tones and on the show, and she was the reason why they kind of killed her off. It's been over 10 years. I could spoil Farscape for all of you. The reason why they kind of killed her off is not that she wanted to go, it's just that she was starting to have issues with the makeup, and she was kind of tired of kind of every other week having her head kind of shaved down. So it was like, as much as I love the character, as much as I love the show, I have to step back, step away because of health. So.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, sometimes it takes an actress to do that. And I think when you're talking about actresses, obviously Game of Thrones was a huge deal this year.
Right.
I am not a fan.
I think I might have seen a half an episode somewhere.
It's just not my cup of tea. I've given it a shot. But
I know. How dare us, right?
Sophie Turner is Jean Grey in this film, and she is the... I mean, this movie makes or breaks with her. How do you think that she did with Jean Grey, her arc throughout the course of this film?
I think she portrayed the character very well, because I think Jean is supposed to be kind of how... I heard many people describe the actress that plays Jean Grey as statuesque. I believe that kind of...
You're talking about Framke Jensen, the chick who played it in the original trilogy?
No, the one
Sophie
now.
Turner.
Sophie
okay.
Turner. Nothing against the actress that originally played her. I'm talking now. Sophie is kind of statuesque, and she has to be like that. It just, she showed more in this playing Dark Phoenix. She showed a little bit more emotion and more struggle being Dark Phoenix in this than in
in Apocalypse.
Not in Apocalypse. I'm talking in Dark Phoenix right now. She showed more emotion than the original Jean Grey character, because it didn't seem like, even though she was emotional, but it was, she seemed stiff in the original trilogy. That character, she seemed a little bit stiff.
And it's been a long time since I've seen the original trilogy.
I'm trying to remember in regards to that, but she seemed that particular character, and that how the actress, nothing against her, she's a good actress, she's done a lot of other great roles, but Sophie seems a little bit more looser with the character in regards to personality, meaning that when it's time for her to be emotional, she's emotional in the role. It's like, okay, you're supposed to be sad, upset, you're supposed to cry, okay, do it. And you see the tears, you see her being oh yeah, I'm hurting my family. I have to. And you see the tears in her eyes. You see them rolling down. Whereas you didn't really see that come off Jean Grey until maybe when she was trying to kill Wolverine in X-3. Like, oh, why am I trying to kill you? But I got to kill you and, you know, try to kill you in three, you know. But it was just, you know, comparing the two Jean Greys, the one that the Sophie was playing seemed a little bit more looser and more well played.
I can see that, and I definitely really like Sophie's take on the character. I think that, like you said, like it's definitely a lot more looser. But I also think that,
now don't get me wrong, folks. I mean that in a good way, not a bad way. I know there's going to be a lot of people, how dare you say that? But it's a way how a lot of actresses and actors tend to portray a role. Sometimes you get, if it's the same character, you'll get one actor play it really stiff and another actor years later play it a little bit looser, and it's a better take.
It also too could be the writing could also attribute to that as well. And it's been so long since I've seen the original, but I think as her, this film really makes her break, like it really rides on Turner's shoulders. And I think that she does a really good job with it. I think that she's very emotional when she's... You can definitely tell that she's torn between this family that she now has in the X-Men, but also between this cosmic force and this cosmic hunger. We talked about this with Andrew from Living Fire Gaming when we talked about the comics. In the comics, in the original continuity, when they're talking about the Phoenix Force, Lyandra actually says that the Phoenix Force is basically has a hunger that is greater than Galactus, and it is a devourer of worlds, and it is all-consuming. And Storm even classifies her and says that, you know, when as she's feeling the psychic energy that's erupting off of Jean as the Phoenix, she says that there's just this all-consuming lust. And I think that we've really got to see that struggle here in this film. And she does a really good job of just someone that just wants answers and just really and what's happening.
Right.
And I really enjoyed that. I thought that she did a really good job bringing us through this character's arc of being affected and then trying to come to terms and kind of come to peace with that. I thought that was a really unique way to take that character, where in the comics you have this person, not to compare it, because obviously this is an interpretation, but in the comics her character is really going throughout the course of that arc and just basically giving into that, and everyone around her giving
in. Now, it's been a long time since I've seen this, the Dark Phoenix arc, in at least animation form. If I remember correctly, there was a similar take on Jean Grey and the Dark Phoenix as we see here today, which is more the emotional take on the struggle, the emotional struggle. And I think, again, the animation was more that late 80s animation was more closer to the comic than, or as close as it can be, but it was the same type of Jean Grey in a way, that it was an emotional Jean Grey. And with that struggle between her what she has to do and her family, so being the X-Men. So,
well, the comics too also had this like different kind of struggle for the character,
right,
where she wanted to give in to the darkness, but at this one is she's definitely torn between wanting to be with the family and one, or, you know, trying to find the answers. It's almost like she kind of can't have both,
right? But the reason, again, with my lack, not really reading, I have to check my local library to see if they have the Dark Phoenix saga in trade form there, that way I could at least have a better reference in regards to that. But that's, I think, mainly why I'm focusing on X3 as a baseline, because that's closer to recent memory for me than the animated series, or at least the original animated series. I don't know if X-Men Evolution covered it. I was a fan of that particular series when it came out. But I have to pull from more of a recent memory or a stronger memory for me. So those out there that want to fan rage, go ahead, fan rage. Feel free to correct me too, so I don't mind.
So this film is filled with visual effects, but it's also this line of films in First Class started with James McAvoy, Jennifer Lawrence, Nicholas Hoult, and of course Michael Fassbender's Magneto. And this is the final film for them. Do you think that all of them were properly used to kind of have a send-off? Because we've been with these characters, keeping in mind, since 2011. So we're, 2 years away from... these characters and these versions of these characters for 8 years. Do you think that they gave them kind of the proper send-off?
I don't think so. Because... to kind of compare it, the closest thing I could compare it to would be Endgame, which kind of gave everybody a proper send-off. When you compare it to that, if Endgame was maybe a 9, if not 10 on a 10 scale, this was maybe a 4. F that. Because you don't really have that send-off. Oh, having, you know, Cyclops put a new plaque outside and just walk in and it's like, oh, it's just another day in class.
Well, that also felt like really forced. Like, I didn't really like where they took a lot of these characters to kind of end it. Where, like, Magneto, I appreciated where we found him, and I liked why she went to him. Like, they gave him purpose. Like, that's what I, right. One of the things I walked in here with saying is, I really want to, Magneto has purpose in this film. And aside from one scene, I mean, he doesn't really add any really weird, really forced narrative choice to have him.
I can understand up to the point of going to see him and him coming out and having that Genosha reference. It was a good thing, if not good idea. Just that having him after that, you're right. Yeah,
thing where he's fighting the aliens, one of the best action sequences in the whole movie. Phenomenal. It was one of my favorite parts.
I was, what he did with the train car, yes, was awesome. I'll say that too. I was hoping you'd bring it up. It's like I wanted to focus more on Kurt than Magneto, but what he did was awesome. I was like, I want 80s cheese. After he kind of just pushed the crushed train car away, I was like, I want 80s cheese. I want 80s cheese. Please blow up. Please blow up. Please blow up. 2 minutes later, it finally blows up. I'm like, really? If it was real, I just wanted that 80s cheese. Like, it's like watching that classic 80s movie, see a car go off the cliff. It has to instantly blow up. But
then you didn't get that.
I didn't get that instant 80s cheese. But but if it did, you probably would have heard me in the theater go, yes. But I did enjoy his scenes, and he worked it very well. I will say what he did with the guns, even though I brought up the whole aspect of bullets, the whole bullets trope, but I know it seems hypocritical with me right now in regards to that, but he didn't know what was going on around him. So him having every gun pointed at her, at this particular bad person, was kind of an ingenious idea on his part. He didn't know. So best thing to do, I need more weapons. I don't have anything around. Oh, wait, there's guns here. Let me give this a try. And he, also, I could understand his thinking, I have to slow this person down for what's going on behind me.
I will say that that is one of the, it, visually speaking, it's one of the best sequences in that, in this movie. That and Magneto's in one of my other favorite scenes. I love the scene where Jessica Chastain's character, who never really gets a name, she's just kind of this mysterious lady in black.
Okay, let's say call her Emma Frost wannabe.
I'm just going to call her Chastain. But she they're basically on top of this like stairwell, and Magneto enters into the room, and Magneto is levitated up towards her, and she just slowly starts to crush his head, like crush his helmet into his head and breaks, and just the angles that Kimberg was able to capture in that,
was a good scene. And it wasn't her that was doing it, it was
the phoenix
that was doing it.
By that time the phoenix was in her.
I thought it was still in Jean Grey.
It wasn't Jean Grey.
Yeah. It didn't transfer until
it's like
Xavier got there.
Yeah, it's like right afterwards he had,
which was kind of almost as equally interesting scene. Walk to me, get up and walk, and she kind of puppet Matt kind of
destroys his chair too.
Yeah, crushes her chair, his chair. I almost had the image of Dream Warrior. Nightmare on Elm Street, Dream Warrior, which is 3, of Krueger just puppet, you know, the one scene.
Oh, yeah.
It was almost like that, but it was just... that's the scene that kind of comes to mind now. It was almost...
very creepy in the way that they did it. All right, so I think that for the majority of this, like, we've really dissected this. Again, just... final thoughts?
See it at least once. I'm not going to say rent it. I'm going to say it's like at least see it in the theater once. If you can't, I'm not going to sit here and tell everybody go find Uncle Tony and find it, you know, get it through him. But if you want to see it in the theater, go see it in the theater. If you don't want to pay the $5-$10 for it. See if there's a theater near you that does it at $2. See it at a $2 theater. My overall rating for it is maybe a.
Whoa! We haven't gotten a rating.
Okay.
Yet.
Okay.
No ratings yet.
Okay. I almost forgot. Josh is the leader in this dance. I do apologize for that. So,
I'm gonna go final go thoughts ahead. For me. I think that this could have been. All right. I'm not gonna say what it could have been. But this, it's entertaining.
Yeah.
But misguided.
I could see that.
So, I'm going to let you, what would you give this on the Rorschach rating scale? 1 out of 5.
1 out of 5? 2.5.
Okay. I'm going to go with 3. I feel like there wasn't a need for Jessica Chastain's villain. She's underdeveloped. She has no point or no real purpose to the plot. And even in that sequence where we didn't talk about this, but there's that sequence where she's explaining the origin of the Phoenix, but they never once call it by name. What's up with that?
The only time that they actually call it Phoenix is when it says... oh, you just rose up from the dead just like the Phoenix. And that was it. It was like a throwaway line.
Yeah. And I don't know. Some of the characters in here are a little bit, for the most part, like it's a visually stunning film. They're a little bit of CGI. Things really good. And Sophie Turner does a really good job as Jean Grey. Like you said, like it's...
I could go with that. I agree with you that. I'm gonna pretty much stand by the 2.5. If I go on my personal scale, 10, it's gonna be between at least a 6, 5.5, 6, because it's not gonna go. It's gonna be a very weak 6. Or if I go for a stronger 6, it's only because I'm here with you. because I'm sharing this experience.
Don't let me sway your...
Folks at, who are fans of Victims and Villains know that sometimes I give two scores for a movie on a 10 scale. One is what I think is the solid number for the movie, and there's another number where, like, okay, this movie is an like a 7. The ambience, like, I get, my prime example is when I saw Hellraiser Bloodlines in theaters. I give the movie maybe a strong six and a half out of 10, but because of the ambience that when I went to see it, it started to, as soon as I walked through the doors of the theater, thunderstorm, strong thunderstorm.
Nice.
And got my food and drink, and the theater was playing in, it was the last theater on the right, and above the theater door was a flickering fluorescent bulb, kind of like giving a little bit more ambience, like, you're going to see a horror flick in this particular theater. So, and when I got done with the movie, like, it never rained, never happened, light was not flickering, it was like, everything's okay now.
That's funny.
And it's like, that being said, I'm going to give it a strong 8 because of the ambience of going to see the movie.
The experience.
So that's why I usually give two ratings sometimes. So
yeah, I think the experience of, like, being able to see it in theaters. I always love seeing the X-Men in theaters. Like, the X-Men was really the first film franchise in the comic book genre that I really got into. I mean, I was super young when it came out, and being able to see Wolverine for, like, the first time was astonishing to me. So
I want
to
say, I know you said it on your end, let me just say it here. I know it's close to the end of probably the show and all, but special thanks to the Alamo Draft House here in Winchester, who always gives a great experience seeing a film. So that probably would give, on my rating, add to that 6, but...
Yeah, I love visiting the Alamo. It's a little bit of a drive for us out of studio, but it's awesome.
And right now, seeing what we are seeing right now, oh my God! I know I snapped two photos on Instagram. I'm sure as hell, after when you're getting cleaned up and putting everything away, I will be doing at least a little bit of a video for my YouTube channel and probably Facebook too. Show all of you out there what I am looking at right now, because words cannot describe. Well, they could probably do, but I just have no words for them right now.
Well, that's actually going to be a great segue. Where can people find you online?
Oh, they could find me at least on Facebook. You can find me at facebook.com/TheLongCoatMafiaPodcast to find our episodes online. Online, you could find us at our main website, which is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com, and that has all our episodes going back to our cringeworthy beginnings, and where we used one condenser USB microphone, and it was bad, but the content is there. We are, for right now, available on iTunes on your desktops, but if you're on the go and mobile, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and pretty much where podcasts are found.
All right. Well, you guys can also find us everywhere at Victims and Villains, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Apple Podcast, wherever you guys get your podcasts from, Twitch, and more. And if you guys like what we stand for and want to help us get mental health resources into schools, conventions, and more, make sure that you guys consider supporting us on Patreon every month for as little as $2 a month. You guys can dictate the content that we create and also get access to exclusive awesome content that you can't get anywhere else. Or you guys can also pick up some awesome swag on our Etsy shop as well. All the money that we make off this show goes right back into getting mental health resources into those platforms. So special thanks to the Alamo Draft House once again for having us here in their wondrous projection room, where we are littered with films throughout the decades. It's so cool being here. But make sure that you guys tweet to us or leave a comment wherever you guys are listening to this, and let us know what you guys liked better, X-Men 3 or Dark Phoenix, or if you guys think that the comic still stands supreme. Make sure that you guys let us know what you guys thought of this movie wherever you guys get your podcast from. And until next time, remember to keep talking nerd, talking hope, speaking nothing else, and always stay out of the way of space debris.
Hey everyone, welcome back. I hope you enjoyed the mirror slash crossover that I did with Josh from Victims and Villains, and I hope you enjoyed it. Yes, it was a long aspect, but one thing that we forgot that I'm including in the spoiler section and that I asked all of you to skip is that we didn't talk about Dazzler. We forgot all about Dazzler. Why we didn't put it in our notes, I don't know. Dazzler, it was like a brief little cameo. It lasted maybe about 2 minutes at most, but it was perfect. It was lovely. The actress that they chose for her kind of fit the part. The costume, the makeup, everything. It was wonderful. It was a bright point in the movie. I'm not sure how many people who reviewed it mentioned Dazzler. We forgot. I apologize. And that's why I'm including it in the spoiler section. But to kind of move on is that as per what's surrounding it and how this, what's been falling, I'm not going to include the numbers in the weekend box office take because I'm recording this on Friday night going into Saturday morning. So I don't know the total box office, but right now estimates are saying that it's going to be coming in under $40 million for the weekend, the lowest grossing X-Men movie of all time, I think the articles have stated. But that's not all. A lot of other reviewers have dissed this movie harder than me and Josh. We, compared to a lot of the other people that are reviewing this movie, either on YouTube or otherwise, are bashing it harder than we do. Are they more geeks? Deeper geeks than we are, maybe, but they are bashing it harder, where me and Josh probably used hammers or just small little ball peen 6 ounce 8 ounce hammers. These vloggers and everybody else are using 10 pounds 20 pounds sledgehammers that they're going after this movie with. Some of the people that are reviewing this movie are going way longer than what me and Josh did with everything. Now, I must say this. One of the vloggers I've seen, it was maybe about 20 minutes, but I think his vlog was mostly on the quote-unquote wokeness in regards to X-Men Dark Phoenix. Now, I'm going to say this. We at the show tend to have a sliding scale reference when we come out against SJWs and the wokeness and all that. I don't mind attacking both sides. I don't. And you'll see it here in this episode right now. And that is what a lot of folks on what would be considered our side, the anti-SJW NPC side, and are saying is that the wokeness is, especially Jennifer Lawrence as Mystique, and saying it should be called X-Women. And they're pointing at I'm not sure exactly what else they're pointing to. Some people are saying that's the major one that you see in the trailers. And the other aspect is the Cyclops changing the sign outside of the school. Again, sorry, I promised you I wasn't going to say any more spoilers, but that's the other thing that they brought up, is that they leaned heavily on Jean Grey, and they leaned heavily on Mystique. That's what they're looking at, and that's what some of them are griping about. Are these vloggers and YouTubers and bloggers focusing anti-women? No, they're just saying the fact that they're not like, they don't like how the writer or the Marvel or Fox is portraying these women, that they're making it seem forced, and that's not what they let me try to find the right words. It's what they're saying is that's not what they want. What they're saying is that they're using diversity, they're using an agenda to push a different narrative that should have been closer to either the X-Men cartoon or the comics that were out there, or any, let me just say, not just the comics, not just the original X-Men series, or meaning we're talking about the animated series, which you could probably find somewhere, but like maybe X-Men Evolved or any other animated, or even the X-Men 3. So that's what they're pointing at. It's like, that was better written. That showed Jean Grey better. So forth and so on. That's what they're nitpicking. They're not anti-woman. They're just pointing out and critiquing a bad movie and the fact that there was possibly an agenda mixed in. Now, speaking with, because to show you that I'm going to hit both sides, am I disagreeing with the side that that in essence I am on? Yes, I have that right. What I'm saying is, quite possibly they're wrong in regards to the agenda that's probably being shown. It's not. They're just looking. They're stretching too far in some cases. And now, to turn around and hit the other side before they say, yeah, you should be attacking these YouTubers and these bloggers and these Twitter people that are saying, you know, go woke, go broke. You know what? I'm turning around and I'm looking at a lot of you SJW NPC folks right now. And the reason why I say that is because there was an article put out, and I'm going to pull it up right now. And I have that article up right now. And the article talks about producer Victoria Alonso, and I'm going to be, in essence, addressing her, is because she had an interview a while back. The article doesn't really state when the interview was, but it was for an interview with a YouTube channel known as Nuke the Fridge, and they asked her for an update on the X-Men, where she says the following, and I'm quoting here, "I don't know where the future is going. It's funny that people call it the X-Men. There's a lot of female superheroes in that X-Men group, so I think it's outdated. I don't know where it's going to go. We'll see. They just now have joined. They actually have a movie coming out very soon, which is under that banner as their last film. So, we'll see. You know what? Time will tell." And the article goes on saying, Victoria Alonso obviously doesn't like that X-Men has the word men in it. And she goes wrong assuming it just means men. Now, this comes from cosmicbooknews.net. So I'm going to give them credit for that, writing this article. And that way it's all credit and probably well and good. Now, I'm just want to use that example. And I'm addressing Victoria here. Victoria, you're just proving that I understand you're trying to keep your role in Hollywood as a producer. You want to have that next job. But what you're doing is proving that folks like yourself, like other what folks on my side call NPCs/SJWs, you're proving that you don't know business and you do not know comics, period. You're just making movies with that name. You have done no research in what you are doing. You're just making movies. You're just trying to push an agenda. Let me explain. X-Men, the comic X-Men, has been around for close to, if not more than 50 freaking years. 50 freaking years. Let me tell you something. Storm, at least in the movies, yes, she just joined the X-Men. But she's been a part of the X-Men universe, part of the Marvel universe, for over 30 years. More than 30 years. More than 30 years. So has pretty much Jean Grey has been part of the X-Men since pretty much the beginning. As per leaders of the X-Men. Storm has been a leader. I think Rogue has been a leader. I think Jubilee has been a leader. If I am wrong, folks, listeners, if I am wrong, please correct me. Email me at longcoatmafia@gmail.com. This podcast is a pinned post at the top of our Facebook page. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/TheLongCoatMafiaPodcast. It is a pinned post. Leave a comment under that pinned post telling where I am wrong, what the history of the X-Men is, who's been a leader, use dates. I would love to see those posts. I would love to see them. Exactly. Because that's the truth. And as per business, you are proving why a lot of these SJW, NPC businesses, as the saying goes, get woke, go broke. Because they don't know anything about branding. Because it's been around so long, X-Men has been a brand. A brand. Therefore, they get rid of that brand. They lose that power of that brand. It's like McDonald's getting rid of the arches. It's that close to that. Burger King get rid of their logo or changing their logo. That's why when IHOP, the International House of Pancakes, switched to IHOB, IHOB, people got pissed because they were used to the IHOP, IHOP branding. They got used to that logo. They got used to that brand. And also, when a lot of folks, instead of saying McDonald's, they used Mickey D's. And I'm sure now, even McDonald's uses the whole aspect of Mickey D's as a brand. They recognize that the folks are saying it, and they're using it as a brand recognition. So they go with it because people recognize Mickey D's. That's a brand. They roll with it. They recognize what their customer base does. You, as a NPC slash SJW, wanting Marvel to change the name of the X-Men to X-Women, you're changing a brand. But I must say, now that Disney has owned Marvel, now that a lot of folks are pointing out that Marvel is getting woke and has been pushing the whole aspect of diversity, and I'm using, I am trying to bring up their website right now, or I should say YouTube, so I can get the proper channels. And it's one of which is, and the thunk you saying, one is Ethan Van Shiver's channel, which is Comic Artist Pro, and bring up his channel so I'm getting it correct. And it's under C. And is one it Comic Artist Pro. Come on. Comic Artist Pro Secrets, and the person behind it was an artist for X-Men. And the person that does it is Ethan Van Shiver. I know I am mispronouncing his name. The other channel that shows how comics have been going to crap is Comics Matter with your boy Zach. That's right, these two channels have been showing about how going woke is going, how the comics industry is going woke, and that they're going broke by pointing out the diversity and how bad these issues are becoming in Marvel and a little bit of DC, and some of the crap work, and how comics have been declining since they've been forcing diversity, forcing politics, and forcing everything else in the whole community. Yes, there has been diversity in comics for a long, long time. But in recent years, in the past 3 to 5 years, it has gotten worse. Instead of being in the background, they're forcing it down our throats. That's what the Ethan is pointing out. That's why Comics Matter with your boy Zach has been pointing out. And that's what they're pointing out. We don't want it forced down our throats. You can have diversity. You can have it in the background, but we don't want it forced down our throats. And will Marvel change it from X-Men to X-Women? Maybe. Because that's how Marvel is right now. But if they are smart, they're not, because it's branding. They know folks will not look at, they'll see X-Women and put it back on the shelf. They know a bunch of comic book stores will not order X-Women. They will order X-Men because it's brand recognition and people will pick it up. They will not buy X-Women. So you have to understand branding. That's why I push for this, for my show, the Long Coat Mafia Podcast, as a geek community where all geeks are accepted. Yet most folks, when they see us, they see the idiot group known as the Trenchcoat Mafia, the cowards that they were to do what they did, to go to the extreme that they did. And I don't mean committing suicide. Committing suicide is bad. And what the kids did was bad all around. What they chose to get back at those students was bad. To shoot up that school was bad. I am different. This podcast is different. Everything we try to push is positive. That's why in my show notes, and at the start of this program, I disavowed committing suicide. I am promoting suicide prevention. What are you doing? We're trying to push X-Women, and they should change their name because of reasons. No, you don't know, understand brand recognition. That's why Starbucks is a thing. That's why Mickey D's is a thing. That's why a lot of stuff out there is a thing. Granted, there are some aspects that need to change, that changed over the years. Like, postmen changed to postal carriers. Please understand this. You're showing that you're an idiot. This was why a lot of folks don't like the Oscars. This is why a lot of folks don't like a lot of what you're doing, Victoria. And a lot of folks in Hollywood, when they come out saying, promoting an agenda, we don't want to hear it. We just want to be entertained. And you're shoving an agenda down our throats we don't want. That's why you get folks like me, an asshat, neckbeard bastard, yelling at you on the internet. We're not being trolls. We're not being cisgendered male chauvinist Nazi pigs. We're being your critic. And it's not just this one red-headed fat bastard that is yelling at you. You have folks of all genders, creeds, and sexes coming saying that you are wrong. We're not being trolls. We're not being anything like that. We're critiquing what you're saying, and we're saying we just want it either A, toned down, or you to stop. And that's all I'm going to say right now in regards to this, because I'm rambling. So, that being said, again, I'm not going to give the folks the Mojo numbers for the week. I'll say that for our hostful next week. It's going to be an in-house hostful, so stay tuned for that. And where you can find us is that, as always, you can find us on iTunes if you're on a desktop or a laptop computer. For the time being, you can find us on iTunes. You can find us on Stitcher Radio. You can find us on Spotify. You can find us at our main website, which is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. There you can find all our episodes going straight to the beginning, where we had just one microphone and it was just an audio cringe fest, And we have a lot of interviews, and we have a lot of panel episodes and so forth and so on there waiting for you to listen to. And if you're mobile, we're available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Stitcher, the Stitcher app, Spotify app, the Podbean app. I do recommend using the Podbean app because it might be, in most cases, a little bit more stable than Apple Music or Google Play, because there are times that both, from what I hear, both are kind of finicky. If not, you could always listen to us on YouTube, because we are on YouTube. Speaking of YouTube, I do recommend that you subscribe to our YouTube channel, because we tend to put up exclusive videos on YouTube every now and again, as well as exclusive videos on our Facebook page. So, while you're on YouTube, or either on your desktop or laptop, or on using the YouTube app, search for the Long Coat Mafia Podcast, and we do come up. Hit that subscribe button. Check out our videos. We do a lot of walking tours, like with what we did with Victims and Villains. We did a kind of a exploring video of the projection area of the Alamo Draft House in Winchester, Virginia. So it was great. I do suggest checking that out. If by chance we know that the video will be insta-claimed on YouTube, or it might not be YouTube worthy, we will put it on our Facebook page. Therefore, that video will be a Facebook exclusive. So that's why we recommend also going to Facebook as well. Again, our Facebook page is facebook.com/ The Long Coat Mafia Podcast. If you're on the mobile, just look for, do a search for The Long Coat Mafia Podcast. We do come up. Hit that like button. Or if you want to, subscribe to our Facebook group that's there. We'll eventually kind of work the group into everything else. What else? We do have a Mixer channel. It is mixer.com/LCMP, and the letters are capitalized. We should start streaming there soon, because there is a couple of updates and to some of the games that we have on hand, so we might go back to those games in the near future. Even though we do hate Destiny 2, we do realize it has become free to play with all the DLC, so we should go back to it and maybe play the game under a different character from the beginning, so we could play all the DLC and experience it all at once and see how the game has changed since it pulled away from Activision. So we are also have a channel on Twitch. The Twitch link is, or I should say, the Twitch site is twitch.tv/ Long Coat Mafia Pod. There are no uppercase in it. We might alternate between Mixer.com and Twitch. So stay tuned. We'll post updates to Twitter when we about to stream. And speaking of Twitter, our Twitter handle is Long Coat Mafia. Our Instagram handle, if you want to follow us there, is also Long Coat Mafia. If you want to be a part of this discussion, whether X-Men or what I just talked about, Victoria, the producer of Victoria, wanting to change the name to X-Women, leave us an email at longcoatmafia@gmail.com, or leave a comment under the pinned post on our Facebook page, and we will read your opinions on the air. Now, I must add that I do love when, like, the fact that women want to be a part of producers, directors, lead stars. We just might disagree with their politics. Remember that. That's what we're disagreeing with. Their politics. We want more diversity in Hollywood. We want more people who are minorities in Hollywood doing their thing. We are supporter of a lot of people in the independent community. So that's what we're going for. That's what we want. What we disagree with a lot of times is the politics and what people may have to say. So that being said, we're going to cut the episode right here, and we'll catch you next week on our host-based episode. And I think that is about it, because there's nothing more I really need to say. I ranted on what I needed to say, and over the next couple of days, I'll probably be preparing for next week's host-based episode. It'll be awesome to get Big Candy back in studio, and then we'll hear updates from him, more on a lot what to say. There's a lot of news that's coming out, and next week, or when you're hearing this, E3 is happening, so we may give you E3 news. So, stay tuned for next week's episode. There's a lot to say next week. I'm going to try to cram it all in about 2 hours. So, if not close to three. So, stay tuned. It's going to be one hell of a week. Again, special thanks to Josh from Victims and Villains. Links to his social media, his show's social media stuff will be in the show's description, as well as the numbers to the National Suicide Prevention Hotline will be in the show's description. Our social media links will be in the show description. So please stay tuned. Show Victims and Villains some love. Josh might not agree with what we have to say in regards to a lot of stuff. We don't mind that. We're happy to be with him and do a lot of crossover work with him. So, take care. I am out. So, again, see you next week.
You've been listening to the Long Coat Mafia Podcast, the internet's most hated and mafia-themed geek podcast.